Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
So why is this ceasefire different from all others? That's the question today as the peace between Hamas and Israel hold. One answer to that question is it's not a several-day ceasefire, it's a truce, it's open-ended. Reached by a deal that's a little ambiguous. Israel will keep its restrictions over Gaza, though they'll be eased somewhat, including for humanitarian aid materials. But that peace comes as outside militants, including some connected to al-Qaeda, took over a Syrian checkpoint on the neighboring Golan Heights. Well, to connect the dots in the region, we found Aaron David Miller of the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C., up in Maine. He served as a top Middle East negotiator for both Republican and Democratic administrations. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us. And your take on this truce, is this the real deal?
If you mean by the real deal that this is going to stop the ongoing 50-day confrontation between Israel and Hamas for now and could buy a substantial interval of calm and quiet, I think the answer is yes. The odds, and I'm being cautious here, favor traction for this ceasefire unlike all the others. And the reasons, I think, are very clear. Both sides are exhausted, both politically and from a military point of view. And I think both reach the conclusion that they risk with their respective publics quite a bit of political capital if the war continued without seemingly being able to change any of the fundamental objectives. So odds are you've got more traction on this one, and it will probably hold.
Well, but the start with the Israeli side, we understand that Prime Minister Netanyahu didn't even put it to a vote because he knew there would be so many in his own country who would object to a truce.
Right. On the Israeli side, it doesn't mean that either side is out of political trouble. The prime minister, who inherently is risk averse and knows the downsides of a war in which produces a tie, I think understood that there was enough gained operationally from this basically to move toward a new phase. But we should be under no illusion, either on the Israeli or the Hamas side, that this solves the strategic problem that separates either Israel and Hamas or the other dimension of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, Israel and the Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas. The truce, if that's what it is, has accomplished neither of those objectives.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that the deal did not address. It's put off some really difficult questions. Israel is demanding demilitarization. They do not get that in the deal. Hamas is demanding a seaport and an airport to stop this sort of, what they call an imprisoning of Gazans. And this is echoes of the same stalemate in the overall two-state talks. There are intractable issues on both sides.
I think you're 100% right, Robin. And unlike the previous two rounds, 08-09 on one hand and 2012, where expectations were a tad more realistic at the beginning of this crisis, this latest round, both Hamas was desperate, financially bankrupt, politically isolated, basically went for broke on the assumption that somehow their high-trajectory rockets would essentially force the Israelis into making major concessions to open up Gaza and release prisoners. On the other hand, the Israelis went into this crisis determined not to produce a tie, as the other rounds have been, and touting this notion of demilitarization, which frankly was always a bridge too far. And part of the reason it dragged on for 50 days was that there was a gap between what Hamas's military leadership promised 1.8 million Gazans and what Benjamin Netanyahu promised his own constituency. And that gap, frankly, has not been closed and will not be closed.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. We looked at dissent on the Israeli side. On the Gazan side, first of all, were people surprised that Gaza could hold on and had this much military capability for so long? And within Gaza, Hamas is claiming victory, but how are Gazans seeing it? Is Hamas weakened or strengthened?
I think operationally, from a military point of view, I think there's no doubt that Hamas has been weakened. On the front side, their tunnels have been closed, at least those with entries into Israel proper. The 10,000 estimated high-trajectory weapons, perhaps two-thirds, have been destroyed. Politically, Hamas now has a huge challenge of trying to explain and justify what these last 50 days were all about. The deal on the table, frankly, could have been had 3 weeks ago. in terms of the civilian population, it's obviously, in this kind of situation, impossible to say. I think the celebratory gunfire and the cheering and the shouting you heard yesterday is very much driven not by the fact that Gazans believe they've somehow bested the Israelis, but there's a collective, has to be, a collective sigh of relief that maybe now, with some limited economic openings, Gaza can be put on the road to recovery, although by some estimates, it could take a decade.
Well, meanwhile, there are talks in Cairo about Gaza-Israel relations, two-state talks somewhere in there about the Palestinian Authority and Israel, Palestinian Authority, of course, in the West Bank under Abbas, and a lot going on in the region. We just want to ask you very briefly, Aaron David Miller, you have Egypt and the UAE bombing militants in Libya. You have the U.S. seriously considering bombing ISIS in neighboring Syria, and Syrian rebels taking over a border post on the Golan Heights. Just very briefly, how much does everything else that's going on in the region impact what happens going forward between Israel and Palestinians?
It's a terrific question. Never in my years have I seen a more direct correlation between regional developments and what happens on the Israeli-Palestinian issue. There was a time where, in fact, you could separate the two. And willful and heroic Israelis and Palestinians and Arabs and Israelis could somehow hermetically seal their process against these regional forces. Not now. And Gaza is an example of that. Stunning silence, Robin, on the part of the UAE, Egypt, and much of the Arab world in the face of colossal death and destruction in Gaza. Never would I have imagined a time that the Arabs would be so quiescent. And the reasons they are is that they fear the rise of Sunni jihadism, of which they consider Hamas a part, more than they worry and fear the Israelis. And this tells you that their priorities are regional. On one hand, Iran, on the other, Sunni jihadis and ISIS. And so there is no longer the capacity to hermetically seal the Israeli-Palestinian issue, if you ever could fully, from these regional winds, which right now are blowing very cold.
Aaron David Miller of the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C., also served as a top Middle East negotiator for both Republican and Democratic administrations. And by the way, we want to mention you have a new book coming out soon, The End of Greatness, Why America Can't Have and Doesn't Want Another Great President. We'll leave you with that provocative title and talk to you about that in the fall. But thanks so much, Aaron.
Thank you, Robin.